This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
We're officially recording. Somebody is?
Yes. Yes.
I just switched mine on.
Yeah, sure, Kim.
I need private copies, but I didn't get all the good stuff though.
Everybody
when I write
ready?
The book about podcasts, I'll go back on.
No,
on
you don't.
Tapes.
Kevin's not ready yet. Right. Let him calm down. Let him get his talk out.
All right, Kevin, you ready? Do you have any power mans you want to give?
Power man. Bring the power, man.
All right, welcome back, everyone. It's Indie Comic Book Noise. We have a full boat for you for this episode. Episode 398. And a full boat means me, Andrew the LA Rabbit, up in Canada. We have WWX Kev.
Or do we?
And we also have his erstwhile partner in crime, the Ottawa Otter, Phil.
Hey, everybody.
And then making sure that the inmates don't run the asylum from the master control in the bunker, it's Super Steve.
Hey, guys. Let's talk about some indie books. It always seems like it's too long.
Yeah, it always has been. We snuck in a few episodes without the full crew, so it's good to have everyone back in house.
I think our best year yet. I think we've gotten the most episodes out than we ever have so far.
But once we hit summer vacation or something, it's all downhill from there.
Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. We can be found on Facebook, purportedly. Although, individually, we can be found on Facebook. We can also be found on Twitter at Indie Comic Book N, because we ran out of characters, although there's 4 characters on the show right now. We're also individually on Twitter, but I'm not going to go through all those handles. This is the show sponsored by no one and listened to by you, the listener. We always appreciate any sort of feedback you want to give us. And we talk about basically anything that's not big two, although sometimes it has a big two connection.
There's loopholes. Fact,
sometimes it's actually just a big two book or property, and we just talk about it and pretend it's indie.
I might have a loophole today.
Oh, Andrew, those aren't real indie books.
Yeah, the Stan Lee thing, come on. No, I'm just kidding.
The Peter's Muscle, come on. What's that? Jack Kirby, come on.
Don't forget, too, you can find episode archives on indiecomicbooknoise.com.
Oh, yeah. It's a good thing to say, actually, since they're not all on iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes only has like 10 at a time or something before it clears its cachet.
Yeah, you can really go drive yourself crazy. And so people know, I also follow the recommendations of my co-host. I just picked up a whole load of Topps Kirby Ditko Magic.
Did you? Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the books that I bought, I got it from my comic shop. Not a sponsor, but a place I buy a lot of comics. And most of them still were poly-bagged with the card.
Wow.
Sweet.
That's so always a good find, because it's hard with the old ones to find them that way, usually.
I don't know what the market is for those cards, but they look cool.
Did you get the one with Ditko drawing Clinton as the alien?
I haven't cracked them open. I just got them, and so they're sitting in a pile, because I ordered some other books, and I was like, let's do a big order of weird books that are strangely undervalued.
You're going to crack them open, but they're polybagged.
Yeah, exactly. Those cards, I got to see the other side of the card, Steve. I can only see one side. What's on the back? Do they have their stats? When did they enter the league?
Their stats.
I used to love the ones with the stats on the back.
Power rankings.
At least it was Topps. They were the card company, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they look, like I said, they seem like a cool thing. So between that and buying the sitcomics and everything, I listen. I'm out there making it happen. But who wants to bring up the first property?
I got a book. Although it wasn't a book in the form that I found it, because I read it digitally. And that found it on Comixology. It is written and drawn by Jason Green, and published by his imprint, Black Crown. And the title of the book is Psychic Girl. There are 3 issues out so far. was part of some sale type of indie sale not too long ago, and the cover was striking in its color of a blonde-haired female with kind of odd sort of an energy halo around her, and then there's like straight line floating heads, and it's a white cover, and she's wearing a white dress, and the dress has no at least not many details on it, and just flows right into the white of the cover. And again, it just kind of was striking as I was flipping through the offerings of the covers. And when I checked it out inside and saw that it was not a black and white book, that intrigued me even more. So I picked up the three copies, first three issues. I've read the first two so far, and it's interesting. Green's art is lush. He does a lot of background work. There's a lot of panels on each page. There's a lot of use of energy, and I'm not going to say it's manga-esque, but there's a lot of expressionistic lines. But even more so, it's his use of color. He colors the book as well. And the use of color in the expressive energy lines and things are great. And we're talking about psychic energy a lot of the time, so it all makes sense, and it should be nice and psychedelic. And that's kind of what I was looking for. It's a pretty realistically drawn book. You know, his forms, I can tell it seems like it's drawn digitally. The forms underneath are sometimes, the proportions are somewhat wonky at times, but it doesn't get in the way of the storytelling at all. He's actually a very good storyteller. I was a little bit put off by the size of the text, the size of the calligraphy, the lettering inside the boxes. It's often very small to the size of the caption box. It's like, gosh, they could have. Seems like you could have made this bigger. Whatever he's using to get those in there, it seems like there's a lot of wasted space. But with being able to zoom in on the iPad, it doesn't really get in the way of things. And it's a intriguing story. It's a story of a teenage psychic girl and her also psychic mother, and they are living a nomadic life in modern times, traveling from place to place because
like gypsies? Things all,
yeah, well, they in a modern sense, because they things go wrong because of their psychic powers wherever they're at, and the plan is to pick up and leave. And so they never really, so far the first issue, two issues that I've read have each occurred in a different location and have begun and ended sort of the same way, arriving in town, you know, and at the end leaving town.
Mm-hmm.
The first issue has the lead character. I'm not really going to say she's a protagonist because she's a bitch. She's not a nice girl. She uses her powers to invade people's thoughts, to mess with them when she doesn't like what she finds there. And if it wasn't for the nagging of her mother, she would be a terror and be like killing people left or right. Like some guy comes up to her and stumbles on his words trying to just meet her, right? Because she's pretty, that kind of thing. And he tries like a dumb line that she shoots down. And in the caption boxes, you're getting her inner thoughts like, oh man, this moron. And she's got him all figured out. Like he's going to hope that I see through his stumbling and see him for the real man that he is, blah, blah, blah. And then she goes poking around in his head, and she puts him down by pointing out to him that he masturbates when he gets home from school and that he loves to do it. And then she starts messing with his mind, and she's like, you love to do it so much, you want to do it right now. And the dude drops his pants and starts wanking off right in the middle of the lunchroom in school. And like the kid's life is toast all because of her, you know, whim.
Wait, I'm not supposed to laugh at that.
The look of the dude as he's grabbing down his pants, like, oh, and he's got such a, like, such intent on his face. But, mom doesn't like this and is constantly reminding her, we're not supposed to use our powers that way. It's great power, you know, responsibility and all that. And she's like, screw that. People are slime, especially once you start looking into their heads. We should be ruling the world. And so that's her attitude. And she feels no remorse at this. And her mother and her do some of their adolescent daughter mom dialogue and back and forth is done like on a psychic plane, so that's entertaining. And again, I like this guy's color palette and the way that he uses color throughout the book. The book just flows right along. There's not too many characters. There's also these like odd mutant brain sucking like many tendrilled headed creatures that pop up in both issues, and I guess I have to do a reread to see really what the connection is there at all. And in the second issue, the girl comes upon one of those like messing with it, her mom, and she has to fight him, and it's all bloody and graphic. In the first ish, when the kiddo who she made masturbate and embarrass himself and everything totally hates her and confronts her at a later time, and she messes with his mind again and lets him think that he's getting back at her, but the panels show him like ripping her forearms off of the rest of her body and then like beating the shit out of her with them and just tearing her apart. And meanwhile, you know, he's just sitting there doing that to nothing and making a fool of himself again. The second issue shows a little bit of this psychic girl's vulnerability. She starts getting hit on by like a dykey, like death metal type of skateboardy skater girl type of chick. And she's like, oh my gosh, this girl's hitting on me. You're kidding me. But the girl's sharp, and they go back and forth with some pretty clever dialogue. And the psychic girl starts realizing that she's like smiling, and she just feels like smiling around this other girl, and they have a little bit of a connection, and then stuff goes bad, not related to her, and they have to leave town at the end, and she's like, I had finally made a friend kind of a thing, and now I got to leave town again. It's pretty deep stuff for just some, startup indie creator-owned title where the guy's doing all the work himself, but it's intriguing. It's been a fun ride. I'm looking forward to checking out issue 3, and I will pick up issue 4 when it comes out. Psychic Girl by Jason Green.
I'm going to go last today, so what do you guys can go?
Jeez.
That'd be awesome.
All right, I'm passing the baton to Kevin. Run with it, buddy.
I got some totally rad comics for you. Can you handle that?
I don't know.
Turtle time. Heroes in a half shell.
Turtle power. They're the world's most fearsome fighting team. Right?
I thought it was just a bunch of excuse to sell us toothbrushes and lunchboxes and toilet paper and crap.
I don't know. They were pretty indie at the beginning. But anyways, I have Lobster Lad and Cosmic Jones, The Beach BBQ Blast-Off. And it's in the shape of an old Super Nintendo cartridge.
Nice.
Well, that's pretty small.
Yeah, well, it's even smaller than like the boxes, but it's in the same aspect ratio. And it has like a lot of...
Oh, but it's not the size of a one. It's bigger than a cartridge though, right? Or is it the size of a cartridge?
It's around. It's gonna be close. It's probably a little bigger or a little smaller than a cartridge.
Well, that's a mini.
But then it's wide sideways, you know. But it's still small.
Unless I'm remembering Nintendo the wrong way, those wasn't like those things were 5 1/4 floppy disks or anything.
No. It's funny that they went back to like sort of like cartridges. That's a tangent that we can't go down. Damn you, Super Steve!
All right.
So we have 40 pages of full color adventure for $5, and they have like the all ages label and that like the seal of approval, and all that type of stuff. But this is a story by Derek Hunter and Shane Hillman, who apparently like old retro video games. Two dudes basically fighting like a giant lobster.
Nice.
But it has like two parts to it. Like the first 20 pages are like the Lobster Lad, and then the next 20 are the Cosmic Jones. Because some people are on a beach, it just happens to have a town right beside a volcano. Nothing bad's going to go on there, right? And then Lobster Lad shows up fighting a gigantic lobster with his eyeballs popping out and everything. It's like it's a pretty expressive, cartoony, exaggerated style. And it's like the colors are all... It's very colorful. Like the colors are basically all popping out. Like your bright oranges, your purples, your greens, stuff like that. And nice. As usually happens in this situation, he gets thrown inside the lobster, which shows you like it's like a giant maze. Like, you know those things you would do as a kid? Like, you would say, here's the starting point, and then you would see like 100 different ways you can go, and then you're supposed to get to the end point?
Yeah, we call them mazes. They still exist to this day.
Do they? I hear robots have to solve them.
Only if you have corn or hedge.
I hear you can make them in fields, too.
Kevin already established that my mere presence here pressures him to stay on topic. So don't blow it, Andrew.
So anyways, you see, like, two things in, like, if you come out of the maze, like, there's, like, two boss battle types of things.
Okay.
And this lobster has swallowed a lot of other things, like pirates, spaceships. So there's a lot of little fun adventures, like, inside the lobster. But the funny thing is, once you resolve this whole lobster dilemma... This other monster shows up and then like, oh no, what happened to my pal? Don't tell me he's dead. And it says, that's right, I'm gonna kill you. And then after that battle is done, it's like, like another dude shows up. That's like, you thought the lobster guy was big. And then this guy is like the King Ocean. And he's like even bigger with more eyeballs. And arms and tentacles and everything. So it keeps on, like, escalating until the final battle where this guy's cart that you thought was, like, he was building on the first page that seemingly got destroyed, he, like, fixes it up and just gives this massive, massive whoompa to this sea King Ocean type of dude and pretty much knocks him out. So this was a lot of fun, a lot of classic like gaming type of stuff.
I like comics based kind of like on games. Dynamite has in previews, they have one coming out where, you know, for when Atari had that contest with the golden sword and everything they never gave away back in the day, and it's some guy going to try and find it like in our time now.
Did you ever watch that, like, documentary on, I think it's on Netflix now, about that, where they were trying to find where all those Atari games were buried?
Yes, that was awesome.
Yeah.
They go through a history of Atari by talking to a bunch of the guys who were developers and some of the games and how the company rose to its prominence. And what the atmosphere was like there, which sounds like Marvel in the 70s, where everyone was like outright just smoking grass and and taking acid during their meetings and just hanging out. And it was like a big party, but they were crazy, but they got the job done kind of thing. And then it goes to tell like specifically the stories of a couple of different programmer type guys and fans. And it follows their stories as they travel to this dump in Southern California, where the rumor has it that all of the E.T. Atari games were dumped, and that was what turned the company and all this sort of stuff. And they dug down trying to find it like it was Geraldo going after Al Capone's vault or whatever. And so that was pretty funny. It was a good little story, so much so that recently I just backed a Kickstarter that finished up that was kind of about Atari and its downfall and all that sort of business, and should be interesting.
Well, you'd probably like this comic I was talking about then, because that's more of their history, like about the contest they threw that they never honored.
Yeah.
They never give those things away. They never give away shopping sprees to Toys R Us or 10-speed bikes.
There was one video game that was given away in Ireland. they were saying. I forget what game it was, but I remember that being one.
Those things are, we had a, my dad built a pond when we lived up in the woods, and it was a little tiny island at the edge of it, so they could give away something like that.
Yeah.
Technically it's an island. I mean, there are ways to stick it to the man. Or, in this case, the kid buying video games.
But then you might have to pay taxes on your prize, right? And then you're like, how am I ever going to pay that?
By selling your islands.
Yeah, maybe.
I did hear that for some of them game shows, they have people that are right there willing to take them at a wholesale kind of cost. And that way, you know, because you got to pay the taxes on that, yeah, you get cash instead of the living room set or whatever. But I'd take the living, like, you won that on the show. You want to have that so you can tell people. You're sitting on a couch I won.
Let's make a deal. I want an emu. I want the emu.
Yeah.
What was behind door number two?
But then when the emu dies, you can have it stuffed.
You can mount that on your wall or something?
You can just have it in the living room. I'm going to do a follow-up. I don't know if you guys remember Kim and Kim I talked about from Black Mask Studios or Black Mask Publications or whatever. Black Mask Studios LLC.
Okay,
The reason I bought this is the art team, Pencil and Inks, Eva Cabrera, and colors, Claudia Aguera, were Boudica Comics, one of my favorite little studios. Boudica, like the English queen. The writer on this is Magdalene Visaggio. Did you guys read this? Because issue 3, it like completely jumped off the rails from a story perspective.
I haven't read any Black Mask, but I've been starting to notice them a bit in previews. Like, I think there's a few I want.
Yeah, I know some people jumped off that train because they had, shipping issues and stuff like that. Like, so it seemed like they were the hotness for a while, and then people were like, ooh, like, Like a lot of companies like that, like even when Image started, you run into business troubles.
Well, issue 5 still isn't out. So, but I will say, I was reading it in bed, and my wife snatched it out of my hand and said, ooh, what's that art? So, the art team, you know, always delivering. But the story just jumps around, and it feels like it was never laid out. I don't know, it might be a bit of a Silver Age DC homage, and that's always been a weak spot. I don't really like my Silver Age is pretty limited to enjoyment of Marvel kind of only. So I don't know if they were trying for something like that, which case it would not work on me, because I don't like those where stories and characters kind of come and go with no explanation whatsoever. It was also a feature of the Golden Age a lot, you know, where you're like, wait, did they just skip a whole page or something out of this?
You know, this sounds like a comic we read from Marvel Noise.
So, but it looks tremendous, as you would expect from my favorite team from Boudica Comics. But I just was really perplexed at issue 3, and so I read issue 4. I'm like, yeah, I'm not getting what's going on, and I can't tell if it... I don't think it ended, but because it's so all over the place. So these two bounty hunters... And the first two start out fairly straight up. They end up rescuing this polyform character. And then they crash on this planet in a third one. And then it flashes back. And then I think it flashes forward again, but not as much forward. And then I'm like, so what happened to the kid they rescued? I think he's at the dinner. It was just one of those ones where I wasn't sure from the storytelling. I mean, there are these cool robot gorillas. Like I said, it looks great, and the story's kind of fun, but I just don't have any sense of the order of how it went or what happens to certain plot lines and things like that.
Something like that just takes a second read sometimes.
Yeah, on my third. But now I'm just at the point where I'm just looking at it like a picture, you know, just sort of enjoying the sequences and not trying to derive any larger meaning from it or anything, and just looking at the pretty pictures and the, you know, they have little fight scenes or whatever and enjoying that. But I'm not going to, I guess there's a sequel title or something, but it doesn't have the same art team. So I'm off the book. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Visaggio or read any of her other works or anything, but I don't know if I'm getting it or not.
Hmm.
I should pick this up and as a test to see if I can figure it out.
Yeah, start, like I said, the first two straightforward. Something happens in issue 3 and 4 where I'm like, wait, did we just drop that whole storyline? But that, like I said, reminds me of the Silver Age stuff. And I know everyone loves DC Silver Age, including Super Steve.
Oh, yeah.
But I like the cover. I don't know. I just can't. The storytelling. I don't know. I mean, there are exceptions. Anything Jim Aparo does is genius. But again, more it's just like looking at the pictures almost sometimes, I think, more than being taken away by the stories.
Well, that's certainly how I am with when I look at like old Golden Age stuff, you know. I just got recent hardcover of Wally Wood artwork from the Golden Age, coming out of the Golden Age in the 50s to the early 60s or so. And it's like his, well, let's see what the title is. Actually, come to think of it, I've got three new Wally Wood hardcovers.
Oh.
Each by a different company. And they're all within the last few months.
Are some released. Of those supposed to come out like 5 years ago and they were delayed or something?
Yeah, one of them was, definitely. But this is first one is Wally Wood Jungle Adventures with Animan. And this is from Vanguard Productions. These are all oversized, nice hardcovers, glossy, you know, spot varnishing and all that good stuff. And this one has the Wally Wood drawn Jim King, like Jungle Adventures. And those are pretty good. Those are from the late 60s. But then it goes back to some stuff from actually from 1950. Frank Buck and Sabu Elephant Boy and Dorothy L'Amour. Jungle Princess, and that stuff is a little certainly, I mean, I find it unreadable, but I don't mind flipping through and checking out some of the early artwork of Wood and Joe Orlando and stuff. That one's probably the weakest of the three, but then I have Wally Wood Galaxy Art and Beyond from IDW, and this has an introduction by Roger Hill, and what this is a real nice collection of Wally Wood's non-comic book contributions to like science fiction and fantasy magazines, like his spot illustrations for, you know, different text pieces and stuff and prose work and covers. Really good stuff and a lot of different stuff from pinups to, like I said, to covers and double page illustrations, et cetera, and pretty nicely detailed as far as, crediting where the work comes from, which is fun to see. I just see some of the names of those magazines are fun.
I do have the Woodworks and the artist edition from Wally Wood. So yeah, but that one, I'm just really looking at the artwork on those for the most part. I'm rarely reading the stories, but man, he could draw.
Then the third is from Fantagraphics Books. And that was the one that's was supposed to be out forever and had many different price points along the way and many different seemed like sizes and et cetera. And this is the Life and Legend of Wallace Wood, Volume 1. And again, nice big oversized hardcover with a dinosaur and a spaceship and humans with the big clear glass space helmets shooting their little guns. And if you look a little closer, you see that there's a human being squished underneath the dinosaur's foot. It's a great cover, but this is more of smaller representations of Wood's panels and art and a lot of text. This is the more of an in-depth look at the man and the direction that his career took. And this goes up to the creation of Daredevil. So I'm expecting there will be another volume that'll look at, you know, like the Wit's End and indie stuff that he did afterwards and some of the raunchy material as well. Sally Forth or Worth or whatever it was. But Wally Wood, always like to look at his stuff, especially the science fiction-y stuff. So that Galaxy Art and Beyond and the Life and Legend particularly struck my eye. But I have the Woodworks book too and a couple of other nice Wally Wood books, including the Wit's End box collection that is real nice. Mm. Slipcase collection, I should say.
Yeah, having some of that stuff as art books is a little bit. I enjoy it, but I don't, like I said, I don't feel like I'm really reading the stuff so much as just tracing the pictures in my head.
I love that history, though. Love to have it visual comic booky history, pulp stuff. I dig all that era.
Guess what I dig?
Valiant.
Jeez. Wow.
And no, Andrew didn't edit that a pause to make it so it sounded like I came right on the tip of my tongue. Next, I was going to say Floating Heads.
And Chapter House.
Continue, Steve. Ditko. Maybe you'll get it.
Not like Ditko Floating Heads. I mean like dismembered heads floating in solution that are still conscious.
You know, I happened to buy an old horror comic within the last few weeks where it was just a bunch of floating, like, skeleton heads type of thing. But except the head in the middle is like, hey, guys, it's time to wake up. And I was like, oh, that's creepy.
Whoa.
Yeah. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about Valiant either.
Chapter House books?
No. I'm talking about Fist Fight Funnies, featuring the world's toughest superhero, Street Angel. Has the Prince of Poverty met her match? After School Bloodbath versus the Ninja Kid. Why does Ninja Kid sound like an old NES video game?
This sounds great. I just gotta say.
This is by Jim Rugg.
Is this new Street Angel or old Street Angel?
I think this is new Street Angel, but there's also Street Angel coming out.
Street Angel is an existing character?
Yes.
Yeah. He came out with her a long time ago and then returns to the character, I believe, every once in a while.
But okay. There's a book coming out through Image that I didn't buy because it doesn't specifically say what's in it. And sometimes on those type of things, it's like a repackaging. So I was really like leery of it. Because it even says on the back cover, a version of this story will appear in a full-color Street Angel series coming soon. So I'm wondering, is that the hardcover book that's coming up through? Like, I don't know. But apparently this is 286 out of 300. So I got in before the lock.
That's a pretty long series. 300 issues nowadays. Oh, jeez. I mean, rarely does a... Although jumping in at 286, I like that, Kevin. You're not afraid to, you know, miss some of the early stories.
And it's on volume 3.
I think that's supposed to be 300 copies.
Oh.
You might think the way this story is going in here that it's going to go in one direction. There's always a lot of fighting and hijinks like that with a Street Angel. But it's... I'm realizing that a lot of people don't like high school settings. Either in TV shows or in comic books sometimes. They're just like, oh, like once you're out of school, like you don't want to return to some... the school subject matter, unless it's done a certain way. So there's going to be fighting, but Street Angel's friend is trying to get her a date for a dance, and she's like, I'm not into dancing. But that's her friend's obsession through this whole issue. Mm-hmm. So there's some things that go down in the cafeteria, because, you know, you have to have a food fight. The person she's going to be fighting after school actually pushes her head into a plate of food. And at this point, the book has turned into a color book, because when you start off, it's only black and white. It looks like, I wouldn't say it's inked necessarily. Like, it almost looks like black and white pencils.
Is a Street Angel still homeless? Isn't that a big kind of subtext to it, or did she get adopted or whatever?
You never see anything of that. Like, it's all, like, in school type of stuff. But the kid she's supposed to be fighting, like, says, hey, maybe, in this class, you should be, because they're doing, like, sewing and stuff, you should be sewing yourself some new clothing. It's like, references like that to her.
If she's dirty, she's a Street Angel.
Well, yeah, they keep on making references to her smell or something like that, and she's just like, whatever, I'm going to beat you up after school. Because she's pretty confident. But her getting pushed into a plate of food, the whole panel goes red, and she just totally freaks out. She has the most angry face in this panel where, like, you can, like, the veins would be just popping out of your forehead. And you're like, well, this isn't going to go well. But, of course, they get separated and everything. And then we get to the fight after school. And they have a couple double-page spreads where it's, like, a lot of, you know, like, the typical Japanese lines for motion and everything. Well, she goes to kick this guy. He's ducking. But you can still see his impression of where he was. Because that's done, like, in pen. And where he actually is the colored-in figure. So there's some cool things like that. And she actually loses the fight. And you're like, well, how...
Whoa. How could she lose the fight?
Yeah, how could she have lost the fight? Well, the funny thing is, this guy is then hanging out in her locker. Because it's like, well, now that everyone thinks I beat you, like, they want a piece of him. And they want to fight. So they're like, he's like, well, I'm actually worse off now. So they come to some sort of agreement. Like, well, they say, well, Street Angel's friend is like, well, if you're going to be going to the dance with her, if you say you're her boyfriend, then people won't pick on you anymore. So it all ends up happy at the school dance, where they're trying not to really dance with each other because they hate each other.
I thought she didn't want to go. What's in it for her to go to the dance?
Well, she was also going to get some lunches paid for a couple weeks, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I'm like, they got to give her something. Like, so far, it doesn't seem like she's getting anything out of the deal.
Oh, and of course, it was like a pink, I guess it's a sort of like a totally pink with different shades of pink cover. Because the Street Angel collection was also in the same pink. So it all fits. So what are you going to enlighten us with now, Phil?
I think Steve is going to talk about the tick.
Phil wants to go last at any possible possibility. All right, I'm caught then. I reread the Tick Omnibus Sunday through Wednesday, and the Tick Omnibus 2, Thursday ad infinitum, both soft cover from New England Comics. They reprints the first 10 issues of The Tick.
I love the first issue. Well, I love all of them, but I love the first issue.
The first 10 issues are the ones that Ben Edlund wrote and drew with Dave Garcia inks on many of the issues. But this is great indie, clever humor. I mean, obviously, yeah. Edlund's gone on to, you know, work for Joss Whedon on Angel and other shows and has done a lot of TV work and has made it in the biz, so to speak. But the good old Tick, I'm telling you, these first 10 issues are so funny and satirical and hold up to this day, especially as you get older and more jaded as you look back at different trends in comic books and you look at some of the things he was joking on here with the Tick. I mean, you know what the deal is with the Tick. He's a simple-minded, very sincere, nigh-invulnerable hero who rattles off phrases like he's Adam West Batman.
And I just remember the Fox cartoon.
The cartoon was pretty good.
Yeah.
They represented a lot of the aspect. I mean, Edlund was involved, so they did a lot of the jokes from the comic there as best they could. And his partner is the reluctant Arthur, who is a frustrated accountant.
Moth.
Who, right, comes upon this moth commando suit and uses it to be the Tick sidekick, and he's the brains and the money behind the operation. And there's a whole thing of them wanting the moth suit back, where it came from, like the Rocketeer type of thing. That's funny. They do a whole Clark Kent Superman riff where, like, the Tick totally just immediately recognizes that Clark is Superman, and it's flipping Clark out so bad. And frustrating him and making him so mad and making him really show his possibly true colors. There's a whole thing of Elektra and a bunch of Frank Miller ninjas that are just hilarious. The ninjas are like Clone Wars droids or something, the way they're used to comic relief. There's a samurai who uses a big loaf of Italian bread to fight with.
Ninja Turtles showed up too.
There's a chainsaw vigilante that kind of mocks on some of the dark and gritty type stuff like the Punisher. And issue after issue, it's really tight, really fun. The dialogue is just hilarious. I crack up several times as I'm reading these issues. And I mean, Chairface Chippendale is in here from that they used in the cartoon. And it makes me want to watch the cartoons with my 12 and 7-year old and see if any of the humor catches on with them, because it's good stuff.
Well, for Christmas, as a gift, the third volume of the March series from IDW. That's the John Lewis biography, also written by Andrew Aiden, his aide, and art by Nate Powell. And the first two volumes I devoured quickly. But this one I've been kind of slowly... You ever reach the end of one, like a series, and you kind of take it a lot slower because you're like, oh, it's the last one. So you want to kind of have it linger and everything. Well, that's how I've been treating book three. And this I'm not much generally for biographies unless you've done something kind of interesting. And I think John Lewis definitely had an interesting life. Like, this isn't just some dude that sat around, you know, he marched in the different civil rights battles. So it's been fun watching his life and sort of going with the third book. I don't know. I just feel really, I think the team does a great job of capturing you there. I mean, obviously I wasn't there at the time, but I feel they integrate sort of famous events with also stuff from his perspective in a way that transports you there. And Powell, it's black and white book. And so you really notice when they shift to doing primarily black pages versus primarily white pages. Like, it's a real interesting, you know how most books pick one or the other, kind of like they're either black on white or white on black. This one, because it's a sizable book, they flip. So certain scenes are done on black pages with like white lettering, or predominantly black with a few white figures on it or white objects or whatever. Now, other ones, it'll be completely white backgrounds with very detailed panels in the front of it. I don't know. It was just a fun watching the sort of them invoke these moods through flipping those. Because I don't know. There's something about white lettering on black that's really cool.
Definitely. The whole thing changes like the chemical composition of your eye. You know, so it's definitely, you know, in the rest of your visual processing system can't help but react to that in some way or another. So yeah, it can evoke a different visual experience for sure to go back and forth like that.
And having it in, you know, it's IDW, so it's a nice book and it's printed. And, you know, 'cause sometimes a lot of the black and white books I get are from smaller publishers or independent guys, and not to knock like Kablam or any of those printers, but sometimes that stuff doesn't reproduce, I think, as faithfully. I doubt it's what the creators envision.
Right.
As it's, you know, bulk printed in China or wherever it comes from. But yeah, so if you enjoyed, well, I mean, if you like the March books, you're going to like March 3 for sure. Also, we've given it to people as gifts, like young people, because it's kind of historical. So it's arguably a good introduction book. And I think it also straddles that nice line between it's something that maybe the kids, they don't get their comics in the store. They get it through Scholastic. So it's all these people I'd never heard of, like Raina Telgemeier and all these people that sell like 60 zillion copies of their books. And I've never heard of them. And then I think this is the type of book that's a nice, you could sell it at a school and you could also sell it in a comic book store. And I'd like to see more crossover. I mean, from what little I've seen of that young adult comic books, it's not really my bag anyways. But I, you know, it's nice to have something like this that I feel really is all ages. I mean, there is violence in it, and obviously, you know, hateful language and things like that. But I mean, it's history.
You can't sell that then.
Well, you got, I mean, what, it's history. Like, people really died in the Civil, like, you can't just pretend that that stuff, I mean, maybe you don't want to give it to like a 5-year-old, but whatever concept you introduce death at, it's a important history and told in a very accessible way. But I don't really know what age group them Scholastic books are. I mean, Bone was another one, though, that crossed over, that, like, comic book people read and civilians read. So I don't know. I like those books. There's a whole other world of, like, Tales, Diary of a Fourth Grade, whatever. I don't know what
right.
it's
yeah. called. Yeah, yeah. Diary of a Wimpy stuff. Kid and all that. All those books.
That's it.
And Jeff Smith did some of those Jedi Academy books that had, you know, drawings, illustrations, and prose in it that was of a similar ilk. But yeah, I mean, when I first mentioned Bone to my then probably 9-year-old, he had already read several volumes from school.
You know, I've heard a lot of these books because they make up a good portion of TCAF every year.
Hmm.
You know, but, you know, with, as Andrew will say, all the free comics and all the comic booky stuff in Canada. I don't know.
Yeah, your government subsidized socialist paradise with your free comic books.
It's funny. They do subsidize, I think, that festival now, but not in the beginning. But it's been going on for many years now, so it was. Like, I think it was just in a parking lot or something when it first began. So I think it was probably harder to convince anyone to, support it. But now it's, a staple.
All right, Phil. Do you need a drum roll?
Yeah. So, as you guys know, February 1st was the 25th anniversary of Image. So I thought we'd do something a little different today, and I have a little trivia contest for you guys.
Uh-oh.
5 questions each.
Wait, what's Image?
That's not indie.
Better get your thinking cap on, Andrew, because this is going to be difficult for you, because you didn't read a lot of comics in the 90s.
No, I was out of the 90s.
But it's okay. I made your questions. There's 2 newer Image ones, but otherwise, get your head in the game for, kind of the start of Image, when they had the superhero universe, when they began.
Oh, man.
By head in the game, I'm hearing quick pull up Google.
don't Google.
And hope Phil talks slowly.
Not that bad. I just thought of them in my head in 10 minutes. So if I didn't do any research for the answers, so I'm sure you guys
Phil,
are going to
listen. If Phil's voice starts cracking up, then breaking up, then we'll know Andrew's looking something up on Google.
And if someone can't guess something, then someone can steal the point. Okay. So first off is Andrew.
Yeah, good.
What were the first 4 Image comics and the creators that came out to start it all off?
Well, Spawn from Todd McFarlane. You had Savage Dragon. Was that one of the first ones?
Uh-huh.
By Eric Larson. Was Youngblood the first one?
Uh-huh.
And then was Wild Pack?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, those are the first ones?
Yeah, Wildcats, yeah.
Well, what's Wild Pack?
No? Shadowhawk? Shadowhawk wasn't one of the first ones?
That was later. These were the first 4 ever released.
Okay.
We're still waiting on issue 4 of all of those, right?
Yeah. No, hey, Savage Dragon and Spawn are still going, original numbers. That's pretty good. So, Kevin.
Yes.
What creator is behind the Image imprint, they all had their own studios, Shadowline.
Oh, I know this one.
You're supposed to name all the studios?
No, you just have to tell me who did the studio Shadowline, what created.
Jim Valentino?
Yep. All right, Steve.
The pressure's on.
Yes. That was 1-1.
In Spawn, issue 37.
Panel 2.
Fourth page.
A lot of his are Savage Dragon related, so if you get any wrong, you're going to lose some big cred for your Savage Dragon knowledge. So,
Freak Force.
All the creators had their own companies, kind of like Jim Valentino, like Shadowline. Todd McFarlane Productions was his. There was Wildstorm Productions by Jim Lee. Top Cow by Mark Silvestri. What were the names of Eric Larson's and Rob Liefeld's?
Oh, man. How many did Liefeld have? I don't know if it was... Was he awesome by then, or was that after he got kicked out of Image?
No, that was after, yeah.
Oh, boy. All right, so there's one X. And Larson, geez, I always thought he just was regular old Image. He had a line for his one book?
Yeah, it was. Well, does anyone want to steal it? Does anyone know?
I know the Liefeld one, I think.
Yeah, I think I know the Liefeld one.
Let's hear.
Okay, Extreme.
Yeah, Extreme Studios.
Oh, sure. Extreme, yeah, all right.
That, Kevin.
And Eric Larson's was Highbrow.
Highbrow, sure, okay, because this little head with the highbrow.
Yeah, the little, that's a little symbol there, yeah.
Interesting.
Right, so Andrew, name three members from any Youngblood team. This is your toughest one, I'm sorry.
Was Grifter on Youngblood?
Nope.
Dope.
I'll give you more than three chances. I'll give you like five.
Blood something something.
with a U and two
with
D's.
With a U and two D's.
Can you describe any characters?
They all had goat feet.
It was the archer. Wow. The guy had six arms.
Archer that looked like the Manhunter.
And they all have impossibly large chests. And the something wolf. It's got it spelled with like a
close. U.
So what I'm looking at, yeah. So, oh, not Grifter. So he must have been one of them other teams. He was he was Wildstorm.
Who was the strong guy? There had to be a strong guy on the team.
Yeah.
Actually, no.
Come on.
It was a guy with a sword.
There was a strong girl that grew big, kind of like that.
There was a guy with a sword. That was Cable.
No guy with a sword.
It was Deadpool.
No, you're way off. Does anyone want to steal it?
Was there Brigade? Was he one of them?
No, that was a team.
Dang. Rock
can't
Soul.
Believe this.
Wait, Glory?
Oh my god. Glory was on Prophet? The team at one point. Yeah, Glory has been on it. Prophet has not.
What about that guy? He had the arrow. He sort of looked like Hawkeye, but he was like white and red.
Right. He looked
Shaft
like
the... or something?
Yeah, Shaft.
Shaft.
Then there's like Bad Rock, Cougar.
Bad Rock, that's what I was trying to think of. He was the big guy.
I've heard of that one too. Yeah, they had a big statue of Bad Rock in his offices.
What did I call him? Brigade? None of us, even collectively, we couldn't.
Yeah, that's crazy. You got two of them. That's a big fat zero.
Boy, when that movie comes out, Steve, we're gonna be really embarrassed.
Okay, Kevin. What character killed Alice Simmons?
Wasn't it like a priest or a preacher or something?
You're serious.
Dude, he looks all weird. He's like
doesn't he have a white face or something?
Like, this is big history from comic books.
I thought it was his friend that killed him.
Was it?
Yeah, he absolutely was his friend, but what character? It was a character from a different comic.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Did Tony Jonah Twist Jameson. Kill him? I don't know.
It was Chapel from Youngblood.
Oh. See, the guy with Preacher, the skull in his face. Chapel, you knew where I was going.
Wow.
Good point. That should be worth like a quarter of a point.
Not doing good. Strong start, and then...
Yep. Three in a row, nothing.
Okay, Steve.
Okay.
What shitty character or what shitty creator did the comic Booth?
Booth?
Boof. B-O-O-F. What Boof. Shitty creator did God. The comic Booth?
Boof. I have no idea.
Neither
the answer
I've never heard of it.
Is in the question.
I understand that, but I still don't.
Rob Liefeld.
Huh.
How could you not guess him?
Well, I was wondering what you thought was, so I was like, is he talking about?
If you pick one shitty person at Image, that's the guy that you're going to.
He does okay faces sometimes.
I thought maybe you didn't like Chap Yap or something. I don't know.
Okay, here's a baby question for Andrew. You got to get this one. Name... four Robert Kirkman comics that he was involved with or wrote. Just four comics that are like...
Marvel Zombies.
What?
Irredeemable Ant-Man.
Image. It's got to be Image.
Hey, no. I got mine in before you said
this is an Image trivia.
Battle Pope.
Yep.
Invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Walking Dead. Walking Dead Compendium. Walking Dead Magazine.
Oh, what was the one with the werewolf?
The Wolfman?
Wolfie oh, wait. Thing. Didn't he do Image United? He wrote one of the issues of Image United.
Okay, that counts.
No.
Doesn't really
count. No, 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 you're right. That no, that doesn't count.
Well, he didn't, so that didn't write it?
What was the Spider-Man
ripoff? Hey, it doesn't have to be McFarlane a good comic.
And Otley.
Well.
What was the Spider-Man ripoff guy?
Spider-Man ripoff.
Spider-Man. I already gave you five titles. I think Irredeemable Ant-Man and Marvel Zombies.
Well,
Caputo did it for a second, of... and then Otley. What was that one? That was not too long ago.
What? Haunt? Was that Haunt?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Haunt, yeah. There was Haunt. There's, he also remembered the Outcast.
What yeah. about Tech oh,
the,
Jacket?
The art of the Thief of Thieves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Thief of Thieves. So there's a bunch.
All right. Andrew, you got that one.
But I still think Irredeemable.
And... so it's Astonishing Wolfman that Steve was trying to get at before.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay, Kevin.
Yeah, wasn't that his kid's book or something? Like
Super Dinosaur.
Yeah, it was supposed to be kid-friendly, but it was not kid-friendly.
Super Dinosaur, that was the kid-friendly.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, it's the dinosaur one. That's right.
Is that still going on? Who's no, who's buying
no.
that?
No.
They didn't make far. Toys or anything out of that.
No. Does that Kirkman do any books besides Walking Dead?
Well, Invincible
Walking Dead. And, oh, Outcast.
Invincible is done.
He had a lot of old ones before he started doing Walking Dead and stuff, like miniseries and stuff.
Isn't yeah. Thief of Thieves and still Brits. Going on? Or did yeah. that finish?
I think that's done.
But is he writing that, though?
No, but these were just stuff he was involved with. Okay. Like Manifest okay. Destiny, he didn't write or anything. So, Kevin, this is a harder one.
Okay.
It shouldn't be that hard. But after your performance so far, I don't know. What is one fact about Backlash?
One anything. Fact I'll take about anything. Backlash.
Anything. Could be the color of his hair. I don't care.
Does he have tentacles coming out of his
yeah,
wrist?
Exactly.
Was, all right, Kevin.
Wow. All right.
You're I didn't know two out of three, Kevin.
Yep. Pretty good now.
So are you, Andrew. Oh, my gosh.
And Steve, okay. Okay, Steve, this is where your geek cred comes into place here. Name at least two reoccurring Savage Dragon characters that Eric Larson did not create. So these are characters that became part of his universe.
Oh, I don't know about reoccurring, but he's had great crossovers with other create being able to nope. use other creators' characters.
Not well. So, like, these are for long runs. Like they became main cast members. Like there's a oh, there's a so, few that he did not.
Do. So Vanguard.
Vanguard, yeah, that's one.
And gosh, I'm wondering, did he?
You're gonna feel dumb if you can't get the last one once I tell you some.
Well, I mean, he's had a bunch of other characters. I mean, he's had Hellboy there. He's had Madman no, there. He's had Spawn there several those times. But I'm wondering, did he not create Super Patriot? Was it Fosco?
No, it was Super Patriot was Rob Liefeld's company.
All right. Well, then Super Patriot and Vanguard.
Yeah, that's perfect. And then there's also Daredevil. Remember?
Oh yeah, he was
yeah.
a
yeah.
The Claw became a bad guy on there.
Dude, Daredevil is from Marvel and the Claw's from DC.
The Golden Age, Andrew.
Well, we all have our own Golden Age.
So, yeah, all right. Andrew, what title? This is multiple choice. What title is not real? A. Bruce the Little Blue Spruce. B. Area 52. Or C. Darker Minds.
Well, oh we all know the new 52 is a DC thing.
No, it was Bruce, Little Blue Spruce, Area 52, or Darker Minds.
Like I said, the new 52 was a DC initiative.
That much he knows.
Yeah.
How it helps him with this, I'm not so sure.
I'll say the last one.
You're right, because it was actually Dark Minds.
Wow.
Good job.
Killing it, Andrew. 3 out of 4.
Okay, yeah, I thought you'd do the worst. I gave you a little easier questions, but still. Kevin, Name five Image teams. This is fucking easy. They have so many.
Yeah. Well, does the Wildstorm stuff count anymore?
This is beginning Image, so yeah, Wildstorm's up.
So you have what? Wildcats, Brigade, Cyberforce.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other teams. Was it Freak Force?
Which one's
Spawn right? And the Spawnettes.
Wetworks?
Uh-huh.
Ooh, there you go. You got it. Because you said Freak Force also.
Yeah, Freak Force.
He said Freak Force.
It's five.
Aren't they at five? Wildcats?
Brigade.
Cyber Force?
Uh-huh.
Freak Force.
Oh, you said Freak Force. I didn't hear that one. Okay.
And Wetworks.
Yeah. Good job.
There we go.
Wow, you're also 3 out of 4.
Steve, you're letting us down.
Give me a chance to get to 50%. Let me get a 500 here.
Okay, Steve. Name three of Savage Dragon's girlfriends or wives.
Oh, my God.
You don't have to give me the full names or anything because I know that's hard. If you can at least describe them to me.
All right. There was the black chick with the electric powers.
Uh-huh. Yep.
There was the nice girl who was Wonder Woman Amazon-y blonde who had the daughter already.
Yep.
And now that the Savage Dragon is Malcolm, I'm going to say the daughter because he and her had a relationship.
So I wasn't counting
the Savage Dragon. He is Savage Dragon for like
you're right.
25 issues at least.
You also could have said the cop. Remember that girl, the cop?
Yeah. She died. She got bad.
And there's also Mighty Man.
Oh, yeah, the girl who was the nurse. Were they a couple, though? I don't know.
Yeah, they were a couple for a while.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, when he said describe them, I thought you were just going to say, they all got big cans.
Well, yeah. Pretty sure most of them. Okay, Andrew. Who did the comic series Pit?
That was, wasn't that Silvestri?
Nope.
Can I steal it? Can I?
Steve.
Good job.
That's finally one I know, I think. Wasn't Pitt Dale Keown?
Correct. So Steve gets that point. Woo! He's caught up.
Wow. Did it come out? Did it come out of Top Cow, at least?
No, that was Image.
Oh, for some reason I thought it was a Top Cow book.
The first two issues came out really early on in Image, and then it just disappeared for a long time. All right, Kevin, what famous group came out of Stormwatch?
Oh, was it that one or was it the other one? Click, 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 click.
Wait, I heard your voice drop out for a second.
I think I know this one.
No, that was me trying to reach back onto the shelf to look at the Stormwatch. I guess it was the Authority. Was that the one?
Yeah. It was the Authority.
Yeah.
Jenny Sparks.
I almost gave that to Andrew, but I figured that'd be too easy for him, so I figured he'd get that one. So last one for Steve. What are four characters or teams from other companies that Savage Dragon teamed up with in his comic or theirs? You already named some. I was trying to stop you from doing it.
Okay. Hellboy.
Yeah.
Madman. Let's see. Spawn.
Yep.
One more, huh? One more.
Oh, no, because I said different companies, so it can't be Spawn.
Maybe think about a character I like a lot, Steve.
Oh. Yeah, Martial Law?
Martial Law, yeah.
Okay, and, oh, boy. Oh, Daredevil.
Yeah, that counts, because he came from a different one.
He sure
did. So that means Steve and Kevin tie with 4 points, and Andrew got 3.
So we're going to do a tiebreaker?
I don't have another question.
Oh.
So, no. You guys are just...
Did you have other things on your list of other characters that Savage Dragon crossed over with?
Destroyer Duck, Megaton Man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
Tenth Muse.
Flaming of the Carrot. Independence?
Yep, Flaming Carrot.
Starman.
Turtles. Starman.
Yeah, he's been around.
Superman. He's done it with Superman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's quite a few. He was Savage Dragon, or Eric Larson lent him out to whoever wanted him, pretty much. Even if it was just a panel or something.
Yep. That's cool. I like the dragon. I like Larson.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you guys did pretty good, though.
Wow.
Survived.
I know.
It was looking dark there for a while. Darker image.
I must have picked up Kevin a lot from reading those Wizard magazines. Whew!
Yeah.
Because I certainly wasn't reading those books.
The Who's Hot List, Kevin.
What?
You don't remember in Wizard, like, towards the end, before they would get to the price guide, they would have the, like, Who's Hot List of characters and the Who's Hot List of creators and stuff, and it would be ridiculous.
Yeah. And then I would rarely know someone that's on there. Or they would be in love with someone, like Peter David would always be there or something. Very strange. I guess that's the only way you ever saw who the... Well, I guess there was a bullpen, but you didn't really see, like, what creators look like, necessarily, so...
It's always that same stock photo, though.
Yeah, that's true.
You can see who they caught by surprise, and like, that's all they got. It's that same picture of Paul Jenkins or whatever.
Yeah, they're covering their face, don't take my picture, and that's what ends up in the hot list.
All right, well, I think we lost Andrew to the Skype interweb demons.
I'm still here.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I just didn't have a lot. I was not a Wizard magazine guy, so
we could do a whole episode on Wizard magazine.
Okay.
All right, in that case, Andrew, then give us a proper closing.
Well, thanks for joining us for a full load episode of Indie Comic Book Noise on our countdown to 400. Where will we be? What will we talk about? Where will you be?
Live episode.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work, but until... Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
Maybe Slurmo will be here for 400. Who knows?
Until all of us stop reading any sort of comics, keep making ours independently comic book noise.
Later.
Thank you.